So with that, if our Lieutenant Governor candidates will please come forward, starting with, we have Lieutenant Governor Malott, who is currently running for reelection and is a nonpartisan candidate. On the Republican ticket in the primary will be Kevin Meyer. Also as a Republican is Edie Grunewald. Lynn Gaddis is also a Republican ballot, but she is not present today. And the Republicans will also have a choice of Stephen Wright and Sharon Jackson in the August primary. Deborah Call is with us today, and she will be on the Democratic primary and most likely in the general election in November as well. So with that, we will begin with 60-second opening remarks. Sharon Jackson, are you here?
I am.
Okay, come on down.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you what, Sharon, seeing you're the last one up here, I'm going to let you be the first to give your introductory remarks.
Thank you. I am Sharon Jackson, and I am running for Lieutenant Governor. I came to Alaska in 1983 by way of Army service, and I have served the small business community for many years. I have worked with the National Federation of Independent Business, state and federal small business lobby, and I worked for the National Write Your Congressman, educating our community on legislation that will affect the longevity of your business. Now it's time for me to come out of the trenches amongst the people and stand as Lieutenant Governor representing the voices of the people. So it is an honor and a privilege to be here. As my motto says, Alaska's bridge to a brighter future. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get our lovely timekeeper who will give you the yellow sign, which means you have about 15 seconds left, is Jonna Beach, the Executive Director of the Chamber. When the red sign comes up, please conclude or I will have to rudely interrupt you, and I don't want to have to do that. 10 seconds is what the yellow sign says. And now in deference to the incumbent, we'll let Byron Malott, the nonpartisan candidate, give you his opening remarks.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Pardon my voice, I've been on airplanes a lot, and the issue of pressure is somehow bothering me a bit. Governor Walker and I have served these past 4 years. The governor's administration inherited a $4 billion budget deficit. You here in the Kenai know the reason for that better than any other area of the state. The vagaries of oil have always been with us. During these 4 years, the governor has been able to work with the Alaska legislature, including Senator Meyer, to get the budget deficit reduced by some 70% to allow earnings of the Alaska Permanent, or revenue from the Alaska Permanent Fund to meet 70% of our deficit. The task going forward is to grow Alaska to solve all of the budget deficit.
Thank you very much. And Lieutenant Governor, if you'd pass the microphone there to Kevin Meyer, we will ask Kevin to give us his opening statement.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Kenai Chamber, for putting on this forum. I think this is the first time we've actually had all the candidates, the independent, Democrat, and Republican candidates. So thank you for doing this. It's always fun to come down here. I think this is my fourth or fifth time I've been down here in the last month or two. There's a lot of things happening down in Kenai. Anyway, for you that don't know me, my name is Kevin Meyer, and I've lived in Alaska now almost 40 years. It was actually an oil company that brought me up here, and I am still with that oil company, Phillips Petroleum. Unfortunately, we don't have our LNG plant here anymore, but we still have a lot of activity up on the slope. So, and during this 40 years being and working in the private sector, I've also ran for office, and I've held a public elected office for 26 years, 8 years on the Anchorage Assembly, 8 years in the State House, and 10 years in the Senate, which I'm currently in the Senate now. So I think with the private sector experience, as well as the elected public sector experience, makes me a good candidate, the best candidate for Lieutenant Governor to oversee our election process and regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. If you hand the mic to Stephen Wright, he's also on the Republican ballot. Stephen, your opening statement, please.
Yeah, thank you again for inviting me. I'm Stephen Wright, and a little bit about me. I was born on Elmendorf Air Force Base in the 1960s when my dad was serving in Vietnam. So he spent a lot of time traveling around the state working on weather radar. But I also served in the military for 22 years, and I've had an opportunity to work on budgets and to see to do a lot with an accounting degree that I earned while I was enlisted. So I spent 22 years in the military as an enlisted member, and I also had another opportunity to run for office a couple years ago, and I learned a lot because it was also a statewide campaign. And I think that it's something that I feel strongly about, that we need to have folks in office who are willing, who have integrity and are willing to do the right thing for the people of Alaska and to provide the maximum benefit for the people of the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And if we can pass the microphone all the way down here now, we'll have Deborah Call, the Democrat, ask her opening remarks. Please, Deborah.
Good afternoon, and thank you to the Kenai Chamber of Commerce for hosting this. It's a pleasure to be here, and even though it was a rocky trip coming down with the construction, we made it, so that's awesome. My name is Deborah Call, and I was born in Palmer, lived all my life in Alaska, went outside to school, got my MBA, came back to Alaska, and worked in rural economic development. In fact, that's where I met Byron, at an organization called CEDC, Community Enterprise Development Corporation. Spent a lot of time in different villages doing fish hatcheries, fur tanneries, small businesses, stores. So I understand the importance of small business throughout Alaska, and that's my passion. I've been in workforce development in the oil and gas industry for many of the owner companies here, as well as worked at Alyeska Pipeline. My commitment is to Alaska. And I look forward to talking with you more about it and give you my views on the on the questions that would be coming forward. Thank you.
And that would bring us over to Edie Grunewald. Your 60-second statement, please.
Colonel Edie Grunewald, retired. I've spent the last 31 years serving our great state and nation, and I vow to spend the next four representing the people of Alaska, listening to you. And I got pulled into this through the justice system, the corrections system, and I want to make a difference. I originally came up to Alaska in 1985. My first choice assignment was Eielson Air Force Base, and I found a way to stay here. They opened up an Air National Guard unit with the 135 unit, and I got on, got my commission. I was prior enlisted 6.5 years, and I've been a director, a commander, I'm a leader. I've managed big businesses within the business, because as you know, in the military, there's businesses within the business. And so I've got the acumen, 2 master's degrees, 1 in military strategy, national strategy, and the other one in business. And I'm here to listen to the people and make a difference. Edie Grunewald, August 21st. Thanks.
Thank you very much, candidates. We now move into the question and answers, and I will try to give each one of you the lead-in and change it up as we go. If I get confused, that's because I'm over 70 years old. But we will start with our first question, and it will be to Deborah Call. Deborah, what applicable experience do you bring to the job of Lieutenant Governor?
I have years of executive experience in terms of working with certainly small businesses. I was the former director of Small Business Initiative at Washington State University after I got my MBA. Also worked in rural Alaska, as I mentioned to you in my introduction. I worked with a variety of businesses throughout Alaska, and small business is the core of the national economy anyway. And to be able to do the core boots on the ground initiatives in fur tanneries, fish hatcheries, stores, that is the core of what Alaska is all about in terms of employment. My husband is also a veterinarian. We helped him establish his business in South Anchorage. He also did remote services out to Dutch Harbor. So every 6 weeks he was treating animals, particularly small animals, in rural Alaska as well. So, and most recently I was working with a nonprofit. We again had a business with it. Have a gift shop at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and always managing inventory and getting the marketing out to the visitors. So business is the core of what I've done. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll make it easy. We'll go right over to Edie Grunewald. And Edie, what applicable experience do you bring to the job of Lieutenant Governor?
Well, I bring tons of administrative experience and leadership experience from my positions in the military. I've managed and supervised national level programs, state level programs, and help bring on some new mission sets with the Alaska Air National Guard and National Guard. And I have, like I said, my education. I've managed supply, logistics, war plans, aircraft maintenance. I'm a prior machinist, and I love the trades, so I bring some business acumen, experience, leadership, and motivation, and I have an open ear, and I just want to, you know, get in there, manage regulations and written regulations, so I know what to look for. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sharon Jackson, what is your experience with the job?
My experience with the job, excuse me, is working and listening with working people. So if you have not been through rough times, it's hard to be able to overcome these times. And I've done that in many aspects. I raised my son primarily by myself, and as we know, the statistics were not in our favor. Kept him off the streets, out of jail, off drugs, and today he is a business owner of 15 years. So I would be vulnerable to the people. So you get to tell me what to do. You get to tell me how to represent you versus I know everything, so I know how to do this for you. Thank you.
Thank you. And Byron Millott, any experience for this job?
Having held the job for close to 4 years, but in addition, I've lived my entire life, including my entire work life in Alaska. Was an 8-year trustee and 5-year CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, CEO of an Alaska Native Corporation. Have been involved with many of the issues that are hugely important going forward. It was Governor Hammond who appointed me as chair of his reapportionment board when he was governor. In addition, I've spent many years in the private sector, including 33 years as a board member of Alaska Air Group, and served on the board of a number of banks. The Alaska Air Group thing, it was like they appointed me and then forgot about me, but it was an incredible run.
Okay, thank you very much. And Kevin, the same thing about experience to the job of Lieutenant Governor. Please.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much. And I think my previous experience has made me perfect for the job of Lieutenant Governor. The job of the Lieutenant Governor is to work with the governor in trying to sell his or her, I guess it'd be his in this case, his ideas, his policy to the legislature. And they have the legislature then approve what the governor is trying to do in his vision. And so, as I mentioned, having 18 years in the legislature, I know the pressures, demands, and concerns that the legislators have, and I think I can help the governor sell his or her ideas to the House and to the Senate, and maybe we can avoid some of the special sessions that we had. And then also, too, you know, frankly, heaven forbid, the lieutenant governor needs to be able to step in for the governor if something should happen to him. And again, having served on every committee in the legislature and having been in every leadership position in the Senate, a president, majority leader, and finance and rules chairman, I think I'm prepared to step in on minutes notice. Thank you.
Thank you. And Stephen Wright, your experience for the job, please.
All right, Steve Wright, and I, some of my experiences is, I was in the government for 22 years. I worked in the Air Force, so I dealt directly with a lot of different types of regulations and things. Going back to my educational experience, I have a bachelor's in management, accounting management, and I also have a master's in healthcare administration. So a little bit of information about my work experience, though. I worked on probably 8 different airframes. I was involved in safety of flight. I looked at a lot of regulations. At one point, when I was in Iraq, I managed 31 civilians and worked directly with another 30 Iraqis and worked directly on an Army base with Army and Air Force. So I've been able to work across a wide spectrum of opportunities. So and dealt with a lot of regulations, having worked on a nuclear bomber for 10 years. So I think all of it translates into a person with willing to do the job and be able to provide maximum benefit for the people of the state. So.
Thank you, Stephen. The next question, we're going to ask Brian Millan to take this one first. It deals with the Office of the Lieutenant Governor and something you've been in charge of, but we would like to know your opinion about ballot initiatives in general, and it's a two-part question, and then your position on the Stand for Alaska versus Stand for Salmon.
The initiative process is established in Alaska's Constitution. It was upgraded and modified at the time that Alaska's population began to grow. It is a considered, thoughtful process. It is designed to allow the people of Alaska to, as the initiative name says, to initiate action on the part of the government that might otherwise not happen. I believe that it is a good process and is working just fine. I believe that the Stand for Salmon initiative is a bridge too far with salmon running under it. And we do need to strengthen our habitat and ecosystem management, but this initiative goes too far.
Thank you. If you pass the microphone over to Sharon Jackson. Sharon, your opinion about ballot initiatives in general, and then specifically the one we're looking at, Prop 1, Stand for Alaska or Stand for Salmon.
The initiative process is the most powerful process we have as a people. For change, it is the people to initiate the change. So as Lieutenant Governor, it would be a privilege and an honor to receive these initiatives, see what it is the people are asking for, and make sure that it is moving in the direction being requested. On the initiative, Prop 1, there is an interesting factor to the initiative. We need more individual, hardworking people to initiate legislation, not special interest group with big money buying us out. So I say Stand for Alaska.
Thank you. Edie Greenwald, the same question about ballot initiatives in general, your opinion, and the Prop 1.
Well, I think the ballot initiatives is constitutional, and it is a great way for the people to be involved in their government. I was just speaking with somebody who's on the Fisheries Board, and there's a process there where people can submit their changes, and it can be looked at. And the other thing with the Stand for Alaska and Stand for Salmon, I studied both of them early on, because I knew this would be coming up, and I found that the Stand for Alaska is a more balanced and scientific approach. And the Stand for Salmon, we all want salmon, we love our salmon, and we definitely don't want to do anything to hurt the ecosystem or our fisheries. So I think we need to stand up for Alaska, and hopefully people vote no on Prop 1. Thank you.
Thank you, and that brings us over to Deborah Call. Deborah, your opinion of ballot initiatives and the Stand for Alaska, or Stand for Salmon.
As others have said, ballot initiatives are very important to our democracy. That's how public gets a chance to move initiatives that maybe not always will be successful through a standard legislative session, to get their voice heard. So that's the shining star of a democracy. On the Stand for Salmon issue, I, like everyone in Alaska, support protecting our salmon. And what is happening, though, in this particular initiative, as Byron says, it's a bridge too far. However, one of the things I've done recently is work with the 8 villages around Cook Inlet. We're concerned about the river closures in this area. And we as the villages that I was working with, were looking to say, well, what have we done as villages to protect the habitat of our fish? And it was amazing how what we found out. We found out habitat was being protected and there was hatcheries being in production. So there's a lot of things we can do with an initiative, but I think it's more to be done with legislation.
Thank you, Deborah. Now we'll pass the microphone all the way back there to Stephen. And we will ask him the same question about his opinion of ballot initiatives and the Proposition 1, sir.
Okay, first of all, ballot initiatives. It's important that ballot initiatives be clear and understandable by the people that are voting on those initiatives, first of all. And second of all, they need to be put on a primary election versus, I mean, not primary, a general election versus a primary election. Because when you put things on the primary election, you're not going to have the voters that need to be there to be able to weigh in on the message. So as far as Prop 1 goes, I feel that what we have right now with a federal government that's willing to reduce regulations and what's going on with this initiative is it's trying to block what we're trying to do at the federal level. So the state needs to look at reducing some of these regulations so that we can, first of all, ensure the safety of the salmon and also ensure that industry is also productive. Thank you.
And Kevin Meyer on ballot initiatives and Prop 1.
Okay, great, thanks. No, I think initiatives are important. That's a way for the people to get laws passed that for whatever reason the legislature isn't. And so the people always need to have that ability. And fortunately, you won't see too many initiatives if we're doing our job correctly as a legislator, because if the people want something, then we need to have the committee hearings work through it and then get it passed. But I do think that this particular initiative is not good, and I don't think the majority of the people of Alaska do want this, because the way the process is working now is working well. So why do we need to have additional permitting and regulations? And Governor, I support your efforts here in challenging this from a constitutional standpoint. Hopefully we'll win that, and this we won't have to worry about this. But we are having hearings in state affairs on it right now, and the various agencies have been coming out and showing us what the impact is to the state, and it's going to be huge, millions of dollars.
Thank you. Sharon Jackson will be first on this next question. Sharon, the battle to open up ANWR for oil and gas exploration and development has been fought for many, many decades. It now is open. Your opinion on whether that'll be a blessing or a curse, and any specifics we might do to expedite getting more oil in the pipeline?
Well, I think that is a double-edged sword. It's great to have it open, but to modify the 50-50 constitutional, giving more of our rights to the federal government, I don't think that was smart to do. And more, the resources will be wonderful. Alaska have many great resources, and as long as we are responsible with today's technology, Alaska has brighter days to come. But we must be smart about it and respect process.
And Lieutenant Governor Byron McNulty, ANWR being open, a blessing or a curse, sir?
Well, I believe that ANWR, the 1002 area being made available and the permitting process going forward is more than timely. It is something that is necessary for Alaska's future. It is going to allow the state to determine and the federal government to determine whether the oil there is able to be brought into production. It will add what has already been forecast as probable, it will add significantly to reserves on the North Slope that are necessary to continue to put oil in a three-quarter empty pipeline, as Governor Walker is fond of saying.
Thank you very much. And Kevin Meyer, ANWR, opening, blessing, curse, what might we do to expedite getting more oil?
Thank you. No, opening ANWR is a blessing, and it's something that we've been talking about for the, as I said, I've been up here almost 40 years, and we've been talking about how do we open ANWR, how do we open ANWR. So finally we got it open, and that's great. And now we need to take advantage of that. We actually have a president who's supportive of us developing our resources. We have a good, strong delegation back there fighting for us as well. It's going to create more jobs. It's hopefully there's oil there. We don't really know for sure, but at least now we can go look. I know there was some concern that the 90-10 split is now 50-50. I wasn't there. I don't know what arrangements, what negotiations went on with Murkowski and Sullivan to get Ann Arbor open and then to have to settle for 50% instead of 90%. But all I know is that even 50% is better than 0%, which is what we have now. Thank you.
And Stephen Wright, Anwar.
Yeah, I also believe it's a two-edged sword. We lost some rights as a state, and as we lose rights, I mean, we still haven't gotten all the federal lands promised to us from statehood. So I think that's something that's important as well. We need to look at and make sure that we're not losing when we think we're winning. So something else that I think that's important is we need to have the easements and the accesses so that everything, so we can get ahead of the game and not, the way it's taken a lot of time, I think we can cut that time down a lot by working together and be able to facilitate the process of getting through all the whatever studies that have been done and that may also need to be done. So I think it's something that we need to look at closely, and I think it's also an important step in the right direction, and we're really gonna have to leverage the federal government and make sure that, you know, if they want 50-50, they're gonna be putting in roads and rail lines and all kinds of things that they're gonna have to be doing a lot more than what we currently have right now. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Let's go back here to Edie Grunewald with this question about Anwar, blessing or curse, Edie.
Edie Grunewald, Lieutenant Governor candidate, and I think that it's a big blessing that we now have Anwar open, and we are a resource-driven state, and this gives us the opportunity to grow business, get more oil, and do what we need to do. So I think it's a good thing. Thanks.
Any specific thing we might be able to do, or you could do as Lieutenant Governor, to expedite it?
Expedite it. Well, I can be the best partner to the governor, and whatever he wants to do, I can help negotiate and work with whoever needs to be worked with. I'm a great people person, and reach out and help make it happen.
Okay, thank you. Deborah Coe, Anwar.
Anwar, I believe, is a blessing. I am a former Alyeska Pipeline employee, and I've seen how the oil industry does take care of the environment. I've worked in the environment that Alyeska has moved oil through the pipeline, and in particular as part of a business process development team where we ensured that all of our activities were consistent as well as safe, and we had metrics to prove that we were doing this correctly because we were regulated by local, state, and federal government. So the regulations are there, the safety is there, the environmental protection is there. I think the thing that we obviously need to be aware of is certainly protect the Gwich'in caribou herd and make sure that our wildlife, that the reason why we live in Alaska, is taken care of. And I know with our past history in oil development, we've done an excellent job of that, and I think that the Anwar is a blessing. Thank you.
Okay, first up this time will be Kevin Meyer. Kevin, it's about taxes, implementing the state income tax to help balance the state budget. Yes, no, maybe.
Okay, I'm part of the Senate Republican majority that said hell no to an income tax. And I still believe that an income tax is not necessary. All you do with taxes is just recycle existing money. You're not creating any new wealth, you're not growing your economy. And that's where, at least in the Senate's perspective, and my colleague Senator Michiki is here as well, that was our whole approach, is let's get those reductions, let's get those reforms, let's get the restructures in government first, and then let's refocus in bringing in outside capital dollars into our state to invest into our resources that then will create jobs and will create more wealth to government and to the people of Alaska without recycling existing money. And the other thing that people may not know is that in order to collect that income tax, which wasn't going to solve the fiscal gap, we were going to have to hire somewhere between 50 and 60 more state employees. And our approach, again, in the Senate was to try to reduce government, not increase government.
Thank you. Stephen Wright, the question is about an income tax to balance the budget, yay or nay?
I would say no on an income tax. I mean, we have to look at what's happening right now in the state. I mean, we have a $80 oil when our budget was projected on $54. So, I mean, there's a big discrepancy there. There's a lot of issues as far as if you look at the state balance sheet, it's up $4 billion over last year. So the money's there, it hasn't been spent. The departments need to exercise their frugality in taking care of the budget. We have a 81-9-10 plan where we're gonna fund the budget with 81%, and then 9% is gonna be competitive. and 10% is going to go back in to refill the CBR. So we're going to take a long, strong look at what's going on within the state of Alaska. We're going to do some audits. We're going to find out where a lot of that money is being hidden, moved, or turned over to. And that's one of the key things that we need to look at. And like I said, I was in the military. Our budgets were sequestered 15% at a time. And we also had quarterly funded budgets. So the third quarter is a big quarter where you get your projects set up and you get them done. So that's one of the things that we need to do is get our projects done. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Wright and Byron Malott. The question about the income tax implementation to balance the budget.
Well, I wish that I knew where money was being moved and hidden. The state budget has been reduced by $1.7 billion in these 4 years. We're down over 3,000 state employees. I'm not saying the government should not be more productive and efficient, but one thing I believe we all know is that government must invest in infrastructure, must make it possible for the private sector to have an opportunity, particularly in a remote economy like Alaska. We have, with Senate Bill 26, moved a tremendous way to removing completely the budget deficit. But depending upon oil prices, which are forecast to stay relatively flat for as long as we're able to forecast, we will still have a deficit, depending on oil prices, that could range anywhere from $200 to $700 million that needs to be filled.
Thank you, Byron. We'll pass the microphone all the way down to Deborah Call. We'll get her remarks about implementing a state income tax to help balance the budget.
My opinion is different. We need a fiscal plan. And one of the things that we need to go forward with is to what level of state services do we want? What is the quality of education that we want? Set our priorities as far as where we're going as a state toward the future. Because once we determine those priorities and we figure out how much it's going to cost, are we willing to invest in our state? And how are we going to invest? An idea that's been proposed is to take, 40% of the permanent fund and the earnings off of that pay for education. So there's $1.6 billion that's basically taken care of. The rest of it is how we determine what level of services that we want. And are we willing to invest more? Are we willing to, say, put out bonds for capital projects? What are the capital projects going forward? So there's ways in which to look at this, but look at it like a balance sheet. Where are we making our investments, and where are we going to be better off in 5 years?
Thank you. Edie Grunewald, your position on a state income tax.
Thank you. I do not support a state income tax. I think that there's a lot of streamlining we can do. For instance, we're the highest in the nation in putting out money on education. And as far as our government, we have, to every 100 people here, we have 9.6 government workers. We're the second highest in the nation. And I think that there's a lot of streamlining we can do. Medicare, for instance, the budget has been bloated. We need to have some caps and put in some waivers that are allowed through the federal government that we can open up to the people. There's a lot of streamlining and efficiencies that we can find and not go with an income tax. We can't keep strapping the people over and over and over. There's only so many people and we're losing them. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And Sharon Jackson, your opinion of bringing back state income tax, please.
I do not agree with a state income tax. However, when money is taken out of the pockets of the people, food taken off the table of the people, that's a tax. So no income tax. I believe that deemed need be a sales tax through our tourism would be a good start. Like in Hawaii, you show that you're a resident, you don't pay tax. We have enough people coming through here, they can contribute. And infrastructure is very important, and I would like to see money go into the infrastructure. I live in Eagle River where a bridge was damaged and it took 6 to 8 hours to get from the valley to Anchorage. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. And let's give Stephen Wright his chance at going first this time. One of the issues that everybody has an opinion upon, views regarding the permanent fund dividend cut, please, Stephen.
Okay, well, if you look at the permanent fund dividend cut, SB 26 is just an open door back end around to take the fund. So we have 50% of the earnings is available for government. If you look at the earnings reserve, it's increased to $18.7 billion. In fact, in 1 month, it went up $1.1 billion from May to June. So we have a huge increase in our earnings. If you look at the permanent fund as a whole, over the last 4 years, it's grown over $20 billion. So we are not having a financial crisis. The crisis is we have a spending problem. And so if you look at it, if you just apply the earnings that's meant for government to be applied, then you don't have a deficit. So the earnings reserve, like I said, we should never have capped the dividend. That's the people's money. We want to stick with the 50-50 plan, and we want to return it to the people with interest and with penalties if necessary. And I think that's something that's important that needs to be done for the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's bring it all the way back to Deborah Call to go second on this question about the permanent fund dividend cut. Your observations, your opinions, and your stand on that, please, Debbie.
My observations on the permanent fund cut is it certainly has affected families, particularly in rural Alaska. And it's affected families that are putting that money into their children's future. I did that with my own son. He's 19 now. Every check we've had, we put into his education. His education is now secure. And that's what I think a lot of families do, or they basically plan ahead for the winter. They buy the fuel. If you're living in rural Alaska, you're buying the fuel for the winter. That is a need. So the permanent fund is very important. And as I mentioned earlier, having some of it go toward education, you would still have a residual amount, maybe $1,600, $1,800, to still put towards your own future or your own family's needs, but then have also the educational component, which is the core of what government provides, which is educate our children. And we look forward to workforce development. Those are the things that we need to be preparing for. So thank you.
Thank you, Deborah Call. Edie Grunewald, your views regarding the permanent fund dividend and the use thereof.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to address this and to give some feedback to our current administration. The dividend does belong to the people, and what we see is a bloated budget, and there's lots of revenue. And by reaching over into our bank accounts and taking our money, not just mine, but all the people that have depended on that money because the government thinks they can spend it better than the people, 20% of below the poverty line, that dividend brings them up. And the other thing is I think in 1976, the people voted for a 50-50 split, and we didn't get an opportunity to vote this time. And I think it needs to go to the people if we're going to change that formula. So I think it belongs to the people, and not only do we need to preserve it, we also need to restore it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jared Jackson, your ideas about cutting the permanent fund dividend.
My idea is if any of us in this room took something that did not belong to us, it's considered theft. Exactly. Stealing. Alaska people are very generous people. And I believe if the question was asked of the people, we are in a crunch, we need money, would you please give a portion of your PFD? I believe the people would have done that. So I believe before we make any substantial changes, especially statutes, the people should have a vote on it.
And Byron Malott. Same question.
The legislature has always had the authority to change the amount of the dividend. When the governor finally was a governor that had the courage to reduce the appropriation amount, it was when we faced a $4 billion deficit and would likely at some point not have a dividend at all. What the governor did was save the dividend for the future. $1,600 appropriated this year by the legislature through hearings responsibly done is a basis from which to continue to grow the dividend over time. It is important to Alaska's future, but it is only part of what we need to do in order to have a strong and safe and sustainable fiscal future.
Thank you very much. Kevin Meyer, the 800-pound gorilla in the room this election year. PFD cut.
Yes, and first of all, let me just say that was a very difficult thing for all of us to do in the legislature and the governor as well. But we had to do something. We were $2.3 billion in the hole. We didn't want taxes, because I already explained taxes are very inefficient as far as the number of state employees you got to hire to collect a pretty small amount. We have a very small workforce up here. So using some of the earnings was really the only resort that we had. And fortunately, by using some of the permanent fund earnings, we didn't have to hire any more state employees. You just simply reduced the amount of the dividend. Now, I'm hoping with that in the near future, you know, price of oil is going up, production's going up, we'll have a new administration, I hope. I hope I'm part of that. And we'll be able to restore the full amount of the dividend again. But we had to make these reductions now just to meet our current needs in government. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you all staying on subject and on time. However, our time is getting short, so we're going to give the last question the first chance to respond over here to Deborah Call. And the question is specifically, Deborah, what is going to need to be done to further the AKA LNG project in Terminus in Nikiski?
What does further need to be done to further the project?
Yes.
Okay. From what I understand, and I'm not a professional politician by any means, I am a reader of the paper as well as the news, and as far as moving the project forward, I think it's going to have to be a project that certainly creates jobs in Alaska. And I think if we can find a partner that would incorporate that into the agreement, that's particularly important. I think the other part of the equation is with the owners of the gas on the North Slope, they haven't gone into this project and they've actually withdrawn from the project. So my question is, why have they withdrawn when it could be a profitable project for them? Was it not profitable? What are some hazards there, if there are any? So I think going forward, I'd want to have some more questions answered, particularly from the owners of the gas that's up there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And mixing it up again, let's go back to Kevin Myers to be number two on this question. Specifically, Mr. Myers, what needs to be done to further the AKLNG project in Terminus and Nikiski?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say the legislature is supportive of this project, and we hope it'll work. But we have not seen the numbers, the financial numbers, to know if it'll work yet or not. We don't know who the investors are yet. I think that the oil companies are more than willing to put their gas in the pipeline because you know, they want to do some with the gas too. And the reason why this works for the state to do this versus the oil companies is because the state gets some tax advantages, federal tax advantages that the private sector doesn't. So if this project's going to go and if it's going to work, I think the current proposal that the governor has is the one that is going to have to work. We're very supportive. We want the jobs and we want the additional revenue. But again, keep in mind that we're already looking at something between $40 and $50 billion. And when we built TAPS, we thought it was going to be $800 million, and it ended up being $8 billion. So this is a big project. We need to see the numbers, and we need to be confident with the numbers.
Thank you. Stephen Wright, specifics on the AKLNG project.
Okay, first of all, the AKLNG project is not profitable as it sits, and there are some options out there to make our natural gas profitable. We can do it in phases. I've had this discussion a few times with Michael Sheldon, and he's running for governor, and we've talked about, you know, they could do phases to Fairbanks and so on and so on. So I think that there is a potential way that we can utilize our natural gas once we get it back from the industry, and the industry also has to show that it's profitable, and right now it does not look as though it's profitable. It doesn't pencil out. So why would we put all of our permanent fund into a pipeline and then it won't produce anymore? So I think that's something that we need to look at strongly and back off on at this point. Thank you.
And Byron Millott on the AKLNG project, please.
The project needs to continue on the track that it's on to the degree that any permitting or regulatory aspects can be fast-tracked. That should be a priority. The market will ultimately determine the reality of this pipeline. All forecasts thus far show that with the state in control, with gas supplied by the owners, investment potential that is already being finalized, that this is a viable project and should be strongly supported by all Alaskans.
Thank you. Sharon Jackson, on the AKLNG project, any specifics that need to be done to expedite that project?
Well, it is a very, very expensive project for hopes and ifs and whens. I think there need to be study so that we, the people, know how much it is actually going to cost. Therefore, we know if we can afford it or not. I think there's a lot more work to be done, but like everyone said, thank God for end war, right? So we have other resources available. Let's not put all of our eggs in one expensive basket, depending on federal money to sustain us. We are a independent state, very resourceful, and we can do this.
Thank you. Edie Grunewald, on the AKLNG project, any specifics?
I love the way you word your question. It's not like, do we want it or not? It's how do we fast track it? And I think the way that we can fast track it is, because right now there is a glut in the market for gas. We've got Texas, we've got Louisiana, and also Russia is selling tons of gas to China right now. And then we have Dubai, who is getting their pipeline going. So if we look out into the future, right now it won't pencil out. You won't make any money. We definitely don't want to deal with the Chinese, sorry, but they're communists and they want to get a hold into our country, and we would be part of that process. So we need to make sure that we can get the private sector, private industry involved to partner with the state, and make sure that if it's phases, if it's steps, but if we're going to start it, start making decisions and making it happen, but not on the backs of Alaskans, because I don't like being the liability for this big expenditure. So, and Russia is a state-owned plant.
Thank you very much. And we are running a little over time, so we're going to cut back the closing remarks to 45 seconds, and we'll start with Deborah Call. Deborah, 45 seconds to close, please.
Well, I want to say thank you to the Kenai Chamber, and thank you for everybody being here. I appreciate the opportunity to share my views and my vision for Alaska. I strongly believe in workforce development. I spent years doing that with the oil industry, and I also spent years working in rural economic development, so I'm very familiar with the businesses. And one of the things to assure you that I didn't go into was I'm very familiar with process development, where we make sure things are consistent when we implement regulations, particularly in the oil industry, because there's profit margins that we need to maintain, and there's metrics in which we have to meet on those processes. So that's something I think that we can apply to the state services and get the state services that you want and the quality that you want. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next to close remarks is Edie Grunewald.
Hi there, I'm Colonel Edie Grunewald, retired, and I want to be the next Lieutenant Governor, but not for me, but for you. This wasn't on my to-do list, but I'm here to listen to the people and be the best partner to the governor that I can be, and I'm ready to step up into the position. God forbid if something were to happen to the governor, because readiness is my middle name. I've been ready for 31 years. I've been prepared, and each door that's been open, I've been ready to step through and make it happen. And I'm here today. I've been living in Alaska for 33 years. I know the lay of the land. I've lived in Fairbanks for 12 and a half, Anchorage for 8, and in the Matsu since 2005. So I'm here for you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Sharon Jackson, closing remarks, please.
Thank you. I just want to quote the preamble of our state constitution, which states, "We, the people of Alaska, are grateful to God and to those who founded our nation and pioneered this great land in order to sustain and transmit succeeding generations our heritage of political, civil, and religious liberties within these unions of state do ordain and establish the Constitution for the state of Alaska." I think that we, the people, need to honor that, and I will make sure it is done. as your Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Sharon Jackson and Byron Mallott.
I look forward to serving another 4 years with Governor Walker. The great steps that have been taken to close the fiscal gap, more work still to be done. We need to begin to grow Alaska again. We need to continue to reach out across our state so that every Alaskan has meaningful opportunity in their future. Bottom line for that is education. The need to grow Alaska, though, is crucial. Expand our economy beyond oil. We have the opportunity to do that now, and I believe this administration has the vision to do it.
Thank you. And Kevin Myers, your closing remarks, please, sir.
Well, thank you. Again, with my almost 40 years of experience in the private sector and 26 years in elected office, I think that makes, as well as having a master's in business administration and a master's in public administration, I think that gives me the balance that's needed for a good lieutenant governor and for the person who potentially could have to step in and be the next governor. I just want to make our ticket, the Republican ticket, the strongest ticket as possible, because what I've noticed is that the budget starts and ends with the governor. So we need to elect a conservative governor who's going to introduce a lean budget, and then if the legislature adds to it, he'll veto it. And then finally, I just want to say that hopefully you'll pick up a flyer for Meyer on your table, and then when you go vote, you'll hire Meyer.
Thank you. Wrap it up for us. Stephen Wright, please, on the Republican ballot.
All right. I believe strongly in efficient government. I believe strongly in less government, more privatization. I believe that it's important that we need to move Alaska forward. We have to have integrity in what we do. We have to have people that are willing and wanting to serve, and we need to have excellence. If those of you don't know that, that's part of the creed of the Air Force, and I was in the Air Force for 22 years. So I think it's very important that we look at everything that's going on, and we take a step back on some of these things, and some of these things we need to maximize the benefit for the people of Alaska, because if it's not for the people of Alaska, then we shouldn't be doing it, and that's my goal. I mean, it's in the Constitution that we need to maximize the benefit for the people of the state. And remember to vote for Stephen Wright on August 21st, and Michael Shelton, thank you.